All right, go ahead and get started. Is this the last session? Okay, that explains it. Everybody's drinking already. All right. This has happened before. I will not take it personally. I did a talk on 1ASP.NET at TechEd Europe, I guess 2 years ago, and that was the last session of the event altogether. Since it was the 1ASP.NET talk, it kind of had about 1,000 people in it, but people were leaving with their suitcases pretty consistently throughout the entire talk. So got a kick out of that. I'm Brady Gaster. I work at Microsoft. I am a program manager on the Azure SDK team. I am not the guy that you need to talk to about the VS SDK. That's not my thing. My thing is actually a series of libraries, and those libraries roll up into our CLI experience, and I'll talk a little bit about that dependency chain today. I also PM the Visual Studio website's tooling features. Recently inherited that from my good friend Syed. This cool stuff that you guys probably saw the Lesser Scots talking about on Monday. Syed's going to be working on that now, so I'm taking over some of the published stuff and some of the website's tooling stuff. So if you're partying on websites and you have any questions or feedback, feel free to hit me up. I didn't put my info up on the screen, but I will tell you what it is. My email address, go ahead and just do an on-the-fly edit here. My email address is bradyg@microsoft.com. My Twitter is Brady Gaster. All right. So I just want to put that up there for you so you know how to get in touch with me. One thing that I like to tell everybody if you're in my Signal or talk, I apologize for hearing the joke twice today or twice this week. One of the things that you learn during your new employee orientation at Microsoft is a bunch of different numbers. One of those numbers is how many emails are sent every day inside Microsoft.com. That number is 25 million. I'd estimate I get about 40% of those emails. So if you email me and I don't get back to you in 5 or 10 minutes, it's not that I don't like you. It's not that I'm not interested in helping you solve your problem. It's that I'm probably chasing somebody down who can answer the problem better than I can. Okay, so there will be a lot of email fielding that I'll do. But feel free to email me, especially about this topic or any of the topics that you're going to hear me talk about today, because I work on those teams, so I'd be able to help you out. Without much further ado, I have a quick question. I presume those of you that are in the room are not drinking yet, which is good. I don't mind if you want to, feel free. The second one, I presume that everybody here is already on Azure. Anybody not on Azure yet? Not on Azure yet. Okay, cool. So you want to learn how to automate it so you can decide whether or not you want to get on it? Cool, awesome. You came to the right place, sir. One of the things I want to talk about is this concept of the management libraries. This morning I did a quick little interview on Channel 9 Live, and I talked about a little secret that we've got. The secret is yet unnamed, if you grab the PowerShell code, you'll probably figure out what it's called. We have a code generation tool that we give out to our partners. Why do we have a code gen tool? It's not like T4 templates or anything like that. It's way, 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 way more complicated than that. The idea behind this tool is that we have 80 or so partners. You know how long that list has gotten over in the toolbar in Azure? That's how many partners we have times like 7, because a lot of the new stuff that's coming out is not really in the portal yet. We also support a lot of languages, .NET, Java, Ruby, Python, Django, et cetera, et cetera. If you start looking at those two things together, it creates for an exponential problem. I have a new service coming out in Azure. I'm going to have an API that goes along with that service. People can't use that API without a client SDK. Please, great Brady and Guang, my partner, come and give me a hand. Come and help me out. We can do that maybe like in 2017 at the pace that we're going right now. So we started to think about how we can solve this problem. We had a really, really intelligent engineer at Microsoft. You may have heard of him, named Jeff Wilcox. And Jeff Wilcox was the old dev lead for my team. Now it's Matt Gibbs. So Matt Gibbs left ASP.NET. Now he's come back since Jeff has gone to be Xander's TA. So Jeff came up with this idea of creating this code gen tool, and the management libraries for .NET and the management libraries for Node.js and the management libraries for Java are all generated by this tool. I'm not going to show you that tool yet. We are going to open source it very soon. Why in God's name would we ever want to open source that? That's easy. Because we want you to write the PHP flavor. We want you to write the Ruby flavor. We want you to write the Python flavor. So we're going to open source that tool so that other developers using other languages can actually write generative flavors so that you can get the same sort of client functionality across all the different platforms that people want to use to party on top of Azure. I'm going to cover a lot of ground today. This is just kind of the quick little intro. I'll save questions till the end. I'll be at the party tonight, believe me. We can talk here, we can talk at the party, we can talk in the hallway. I definitely want to take your questions, but I don't want to cover all the material as well. So we're just going to kind of move right along. One more quick little intro as to how you can find me. I have a mini blog that Maz Christensen wrote. And this is the blog post right around build time when we GA'd the management libraries for .NET. Last week, we released the management libraries for Java. That has been a very fun endeavor. This blog post kind of goes through that, and it shows you a quick demo that I'm actually going to use today. Some of the code for the demos that I'm going to show today are already out on GitHub, and you can find them from that link. I'm a Twitter addict. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter. Actually, it's probably about the best way. That and smoke signals. It's probably about the best way that you could find me. This is a quick little demo that I have worked up right around the time that we released it. Don't worry about the URL. The URL is akams/mammal demo. Why is it called mammal? Well, because it's not a fish. All right, just kidding. It's Microsoft Azure Management Libraries. You'll probably also hear me refer to it as WAML. Okay, I might actually call it Windows at some point. But what I've done is I've created a v6 for you to download and install, and I'm going to use that v6 today during the first demo. This v6 comes loaded with a project template, file templates, and 5 snippets. Why did I do all this work? Because I could not stand the question, how do I create a virtual machine using the management libraries one more time. So I created a v6. Now you can just do it yourself. And that's going to be the first demo that we're going to do today after I go through the intros. You can download this guy, install it, and you can go through this demo that I just did, install all the NuGets and party. All right? Going back to my PowerPoint one more time. What are the management libraries? This is our agenda. Quick little intro. We're going to do an intro to the management libraries. I want to tell you what they are, talk to you about the design philosophy of it. It's all open source. A lot of it is generated, so sometimes if you were to submit us a pull request, we're going to say, hey, that's generated. If we pull your code, the next time we regen our code, we're going to overwrite your stuff. But we're going to take your suggestion, put it in our generator, and then the next time we regen the code, you'll see this thing light up, and we'll respond to your GitHub pull request at that time. So we do have this process. Be patient. We're serving a lot of partners in a lot of languages. I'm going to show you how to do some pretty cool stuff with the management libraries, specifically creating a VM, creating a cloud service. Quick little show of hands, I'm going to go through the topics that I'm going to talk about today or the asset types that I'm going to talk about in Azure. Who uses VMs? Good. You'll love the first demo. Then you can leave. Who uses cloud services? Okay, like worker roles. Websites? That's mine. Okay, cool. I just want to make sure I'm going to cover all the ground. After we do that, after we do a couple of quick demos to show you how to get started with it, I'm going to actually give you some value propositions. I want to be able to set up an automated integration test using MAML. I'm going to walk through a demo of how to do that. I have a good buddy, some of us on the Azure MVP alias know him, Magnus Martinsson from Sweden. For years, he's been complaining that some of the aspects of the Azure SDK are not unit testable. When we started this project, that was absolutely one of our fundamental principles. We wanted this whole thing to be unit testable. You should see the unit tests around it. Another good place that MAML can help you is with SaaS applications. I have a website. That website spits out new websites. I want my customer to come log in, or not log in, I want my customer to come create an account, bam, they get a website. I don't want to have to do any manual work. I'm going to show you 2 quick demos on possibilities with that. And then I'm going to go and talk to you about how you could actually do database backups with SQL and MAML and storage. The reason for that last demo is that last week, maybe the week before, the one guy that we had not actually GA'd right before build was SQL. And that was because they had a couple of things coming out around build time they wanted us to wait on. So we waited for them, then they did build, and then they went ahead and green-lighted our ship date. So we went ahead and pushed their stuff out last week. So for those of you that want to party on the management libraries and use it for SQL databases, anybody using SQL databases in Azure? Okay, you'll be able to do that here. What I'm going to show you is how you'd actually back up a database into a storage account. All right, here's kind of the design philosophy. Underneath everything, we have what's called SDK Common. That's the one dependent package that all the MAML packages depend on. That's extremely deliberate. Common is, if you will, it's kind of the runtime for MAML. It's kind of the thing that gives us the ability to do the HTTP, the JSON and XML parsing. It contains all the authorization functionality. By the way, we provide two different ways of doing auth. One of those is using management certificates. Anybody familiar with that? Anybody love using those? Those are just so fun, right? Okay, and then AD. Everybody like that better? Okay, so we support AD auth as well, so you can do that as well. The Kudu, which is it's called the website extensions client in the stack. We also have a Kudu client, and the only way that you can authenticate Kudu is using basic authentication. I'm not going to do a demo of the Kudu stuff today, but if you want one, I've got one, so I can hook you up. On top of all that, we actually have the common stuff is all written as a PCL, portable class library. Sitting on top of that portable class library, we have framework packaging. So what we have is if you pull down the MAML package and you pull it down inside of a Windows desktop application, we're going to pull down the Pickle library and we're going to pull down the .NET library that will connect that PCL directly to your .NET runtime. Now let's say you want to do this on Windows Phone. Whenever you install the package at that point, we're going to pull down all the PCL stuff. We're going to see that you're using a phone project, and then we're going to pull down the specific phone stuff. You guys all know how NuGet works. It's fantastic. NuGet is love. We figure out what you're going to party on, and we just install the right package. So we do have all that stuff all dialed in. I did have a question this morning. When are we going to have PCL support in MAML for all the different Xamarin things so that I could do iOS and Android development through Xamarin? We're really, really close, and I can give you a good example of like why we haven't done this yet. When we started doing the phone stuff, we were talking to Vittorio and the rest of the AD team, not to pick on them, but they did not have support yet for Windows Phone in ADAL. At the same time, there is no object that represents the X509 Certificate 2 object in the Windows Phone stack prior to 8.1. So we were kind of strapped at that point. We were like, well, we can't really do anything. We support PCL, Phone supports PCL, but since Phone doesn't support X509 and ADAL doesn't have a Phone-supported PCL version of their client, we can't give you a Phone client. I worked with Vittorio, and we came up with a way to kind of go lower level to use, OAuth, to get your AAD token, and then you can jam your token in and use our AAD provider and CRED. Then we pushed the Windows Phone thing out. We did that in 2 days. We figured out how to do that and got it done in 2 days. Probably took 2 months of yelling at Vittorio and him telling me it should work and then telling me to look at this blog post. Oh, I meant this blog post. And then we got it working together, so it's cool. And I can pick on him because I know he's on a plane on the way back right now. So. And then on top of the framework packaging, so we have Common, and then the framework packaging glues Common to your .NET 4.5, 4.0, whatever the case may be. On top of that, that's where MAML comes in. Those are all the different MAML assemblies that get pulled down, such as websites, such as SQL, compute, all that stuff. We were very deliberate when we architected this so that you can basically say, I want to manage websites or websites and storage, or I'm probably going to need to manage a lot of stuff, so I'm just going to install the one, what we call a roll-up package, and that NuGet package will bring everything down. And I'm going to show you how to do that in just a minute. Here's how you do it. If you want to install everything, you go into NuGet, you just say install package, Microsoft.WindowsAzure, we'll be changing that later, .management.libraries. We were too far down the road whenever they did the rebranding effort. We have a set of libraries for the new portal and the new API landscape, those are going to be named Microsoft Azure. Eventually, we'll go back and we'll deprecate this name as well, so it'll be easy to find. This is going to give you everything. You'll be able to install this and just party on SQL, database, websites, the works. Now, if you only want to do one or the other, you can install one of those packages at your leisure. So today, most of the demos that I'm going to do, I'm going to go with option one. I'm just going to install everything and party on it. All right? Now, how do you install this? Is this painful? What do I have to do? So what I've done here, So I've got an Instance Visual Studio open. I don't have any NuGet packages referenced. If you want to do this more easily than I'm going to do it today, which you can't really get much easier than this, you would do File, New Project after you install this V6. And what you'll see right here is that I actually give you a project template. And this project template is going to just drop down not the NuGet packages, but the package config that would then pull down all your NuGets. I've already done this. I've already done the first part, just created the project itself. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to right-click this guy, and I'm going to say Manage NuGet Packages. And I'm going to be authenticating over ADAL today. So the first thing that I want to do is go here and type ADAL, and I want to pull in the ADAL library. And that's not a dependency of MAML, but it's a dependency if you want to use the token credential. So that's one little caveat. One more time, I'll go here and I'll do Windows Azure.management. And you'll see all these packages pop in, all the different stuff that we can do. I want to go ahead and click this one and install everything all at once. And I'll have to do a EULA one more time, I believe. And that's going to pull down BCL. It's going to pull down HTTP client. It's going to pull down the common, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the only things that common depends on is BCL async and the HTTP client stuff. Now, I want to make sure I got BCL. I've had some weird NuGet behavior today. I'm just going to make sure that I've got BCL in here. I don't. I'm having this weird issue on my machine today with NuGet where it's not trickling the third level and beyond with my dependency chain. And I think it's local to my computer. I'm going to reflatten it next week, believe me. But I just want to point out, if you don't see that BCL async light up, that's why. Now, in this project template, what I do is I give you this program CS file right here. And I've got guidance throughout this program CS file to do. You've got to do this, you've got to do that, et cetera, et cetera. So step zero is you're going to have to import all the different namespaces that you're going to need. I've even given you a snippet. Boom. So now I've imported all the different namespaces that you're going to need for this guy. Okay, so I've made that super easy. Now the next thing is, if I scroll down here, you're going to see that I've got to-dos with all the different steps that you're going to need to do. So I'm going to have to log in. Then I'm going to have to pick a subscription, because I've got 2, or 13. I'm going to have to create a new cloud service into which I can stick my VM. Then I'm going to have to create a storage account into which I can stick the disk for that VM. Then I'm going to have to go out and go ahead and create the VM. And I'm just going to walk through this code kind of quickly today, just to kind of show you what it looks like. The V6 is out there. You can install it and get going now if you want to do that. At the end of it, we're going to have a tiny little console app that we can run that will create a VM for. So the first thing I've got to do here, I'm going to do Control-Shift-A, and you'll see over here in this Azure dialog that I'm actually giving you a couple of different project templates that you can choose from. And just so you know the right order to do everything, I've actually put step 1, step 2, step 3. Okay? Has it been easier to create a VM? Oh, yeah, the portal. That's about the only easier way to create a VM, right? All right, so I'm going to hit Escape here, or, of course, PowerShell, which, by the way, takes a dependency on MAML. The stuff in MAML is actually one of the dependencies of the PowerShell commandlets. We deprecated over 110,000 lines of code by moving everything out of the PowerShell stuff specifically, putting it into MAML, and then referencing the MAML NuGet packages directly from PowerShell. So we made everything a lot simpler for ourselves. What we also did was give you a .NET client that you could work with. So everything you can do in PowerShell, you can do in MAML. All right? So I'm going to go ahead and create these files here. And what you're going to see here is I'm going to give you 3 different things that you're going to have to populate. Sometimes it's kind of hard to figure out where those things are. And I think I might have left the 1. No, I didn't. I'm good there. So now I'm going to go back over to the portal, and I'm going to show you how to get those 3 pieces of information. One of those is going to be your Active Directory tenant ID. The second one is going to be the client ID of an application that you have created in Active Directory. And then the third piece of information that you're going to need to have is the AAD application redirect URL. My blog post where I go through this, I have a very long-winded blog post walking through every single step of this. Feel free to go on out there and take a look at it. I've also got a blog post out there on how to do, the same thing using your publish settings files. So you can actually download your publish settings file, use the Base64 encoded certificate from there, saturate a new X509 certificate, and use the management certificates rather than AAD if you wanted to. So I'm going to go over here and click on Applications. And this is going to pop up, and this is my one AAD application that I'm going to use. That first thing that you're going to need to have is going to be the tenant ID. So I'm just going to copy this URL out real quick. I'm going to drop it in right here. I'm going to take that GUID out of there. And I do all this in the video demo of how to use this. I've got a video of how to do this on YouTube. So if you forget, you just go out to YouTube. So there's my tenant ID. And now I'm going to click on this application. I'm going to go right here to properties. That's not where I want to go. I always do that. And see this client ID that's going to appear right here. Maybe. I'm going to copy that out. I'm going to put it here. And then the last thing is going to be the redirect URL. So I'll just go ahead and I'll paste that right here. And in this case, I'm not doing any federation. I've just got one application that I'm going to utilize. Whenever you do this, whenever you create an application that you want to use to authenticate MAML, you do have to give it access to the Windows Service Management API. So you have to enable that. If you don't enable that, it'll be really obvious. It's just going to say, not authorized. So then you go back out to the pool, you turn this on, and it'll fly. Just want to stress that. By the way, is anybody in here using either an internally built Microsoft Azure account or what we refer to as a PaaS account? Sometimes they're given out to MVPs. Okay, if you are using one of those types of accounts, what I just showed you in terms of like being able to dial in the AED stuff might be a little finicky. I can work you through that with Vittorio's help. We've seen this in a couple of situations. Mostly it's only internal. So if you run into that snag, just get in touch with me. We already know how to fix this. We've seen it quite a few times from our internal testing team. So now that I've got that all dialed in, I want to go back to my program code. I'm just going to type step one, authenticate. Bam. So that's going to call those classes that I just created using those templates, and it's going to give me back a credential. It's going to log me into AED. If I were to run this right now, what you're going to see is a little dialog is going to pop open, kind of like it does whenever you do right-click publish on your websites, or you expand the Azure node and the Server Explorer, and it pops up and logs you in. It's going to do the same thing right there. It's exactly the same thing that happens when you go into PowerShell and you type add-Azure account. It'll pop up a dialog and log you in, get your token, and store the token in your client. Now, I've got a couple of subscriptions, and I only want to use one of them. So I'm going to go over here real quick, and I'm going to create a subscription locator class. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to show you this real quick. I've got comments in there, so when you download the V6, you can party on it. Now, like I said before, we've got different clients and different NuGet packages for every single asset type. One of those is the subscription client. The reason we have that is a lot of people have multiple subscriptions, and they want to iterate over them. So I'm going to pass that credential into this guy as the only constructor, and that's the case for pretty much all of our clients. Then I'm going to call, it's really hard to figure this out, list. And the way you figure that out is you look at the client, you've got operations that hang off the client, like subscriptions. In this case, I've only got one type of operation that hangs off the subscription client. Guess what? It's subscriptions. I can do list, create, update, delete. All right, can't do delete. You can't delete a subscription. You have to call billing for that. So there's that. So that's just going to iterate over the subscriptions, and you'll see right here that I've got this filter parameter. Whenever I call this, I'm going to tell it that I want my subscription that has MSDN in the name of the subscription. All right. So I'm going to close this guy down real quick. Step two. Boink. And that's just going to give me that subscription back. So now I can party on that one subscription and not have to worry about my other one. Okay. Now I want to add one more file here. And this one is going to be my cloud service setup. And we'll have another demo with this here in a moment. If we have time, we may not have time. I might skip that one. And in this case, what we're going to do is we're going to create a new cloud service. And everything in MAML is going to be async. So you can do async or you can do sync. Okay, I just want to point out that you do have that option. In this case, I'm just going to create a brand new empty cloud service and drop it into the West US. We also make that kind of easy for you. We wanted to make this API really discoverable. So we give you lots of enums and like, you know, reserved strings that you can choose from to basically tell you, you know, how you can party. So I want to go ahead and do that. And now what I'm going to do, I'm going to go right here, step three, boink. And that's going to go ahead and call out and create a brand new cloud service. I'll probably skip the cloud service demo. All right. Now the next thing I have to do is I have to create a storage account. This is the step that takes about 2 minutes to run. So whenever I run this demo, I'm going to go on, start doing another demo, and then we'll come back and the VM will be there. Okay, what this is going to do is it's actually going to create a brand new storage account in West US so that whenever I want to take the VHD out of the list of VHDs and I can put it into a storage account in my own subscription, this is the storage account into which it's going to get placed. So that's going to be that guy. So I create my cloud service. I create my storage account. You ever deployed a cloud service from within Visual Studio? This is starting to sound familiar, isn't it? We're just calling those same APIs, but we're doing it ourselves from native code. All right, so I'll close this guy down, and now we'll have to do step four. Boom. That's going to create my storage account, so I'm good to go. And the last step is we want to create the VM. So I'll go ahead and do this guy, and I'm going to walk through this code real quick. There's a lot of it. You can see why I got asked this question quite a few times. All right, first thing I want to do is I want to look in the gallery and get back a list of all the VMs that I can choose from. Once I get that list, I'm going to select one. The one that I want to select, I'm actually going to create a VM that's got Visual Studio installed on it. So think about it like this. You get a new employee, you get a new developer on your team. Whenever you create that employee's account, maybe it would go out and it would create a VM for them so they could go ahead and start writing code their first day. So you could run your whole development shop in Azure. All right, set up a bunch of VMs. All right, I'm going to go ahead and rename the, I'm going to call the cloud service one thing, but I'm going to specify the VM name as basically the cloud service underscore VM. So I'm just going to, you know, differentiate those two in the portal so I don't get confused. So I get confused easily. Steve can attest to this. All right, the next thing I'm going to do is create what's called a configuration set. In this case, I'm going to be using the Windows configuration set. If I wanted to create a Linux VM, this code would look slightly different. Okay, but we kind of have this configuration set for Linux, configuration set for Windows. We're talking to the compute team, and they're talking to us at the same time, and sometimes those conversations are comfy and sometimes not. We think that the configuration set should be a little bit more explicit. So we're trying to figure out how we can make it a little bit more explicit in the client stuff, whether or not they change the API, talking about how we can make it a little bit easier to figure out. Then the next thing we do is we, because see here, up here we create a configuration set that says Windows. Right here we create another configuration set, but this is where we tell it we want to open up ports. We want to open up the PowerShell port, and we want to open up the RDP port. So you can see where the term configuration set might be a little bit overused. There's a couple of terms like that, like resource, a little bit heavily overused. Right? Then we're going to create that OS hard disk. We're going to put it into the storage account. I'm going to create a new role. Yes, VM roles are dead. This is not a VM role, but that's just the name that they have in the API. So I want to clarify that. Then I'm going to create the deployment parameters. And the deployment parameters is really just a way for us to objectify the JSON payload or the XML payload that we're going to send up the wire so that they know what to do on the API end. All right? This is really just an API wrapper. Then we're going to go ahead, call the create deployment async method, await that call, passing it the parameters and the name of the cloud service, and then we're just going to return the VM name back to the client. And the client is going to be the program CS file that I've got right over here. And this is the last step. Step five, create the virtual machine. Super secret username and password. We could change that if we wanted to. So there's that, and you'll see that my image filter is going to be Visual Studio. Should be cool. Let me go ahead and build this. And I'm going to go over to my portal right here, and you'll see that I've only got one cloud service out there that's randomly named. That's probably an artifact from my last demo where I did this, or rather from the speaker room. I'm going to delete that, and you'll see that my subscription has no cloud services in it at all. And I have two storage accounts, and I have no VMs. All right? I'm going to run this guy. The first thing you'll see is there's the dialog popping up. I'm already logged in, so it's good. I've already got my cloud service. I'll go out here and hit F5. You should see that a cloud service is hanging out right there. And you may see a storage account, and it may be spinning and saying something like resolving DNS. Because we just created a cloud service, and we're in the process of creating the storage account. I'm going to let that run. And you can feel free to watch my computer. There's nobody else up here tweaking the knobs. Okay, so I'm going to go flip back over to my PowerPoint. Just let that guy run for 1 minute. And while that's running, see what I did there? See what I did there? I'm just going to go ahead and open up the second demo. Sorry. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and skip that one. Go ahead and go to the integration testing one. All right. So that's how you would install the management libraries. I want to automate the deployment of a cloud service PaaS solution. Pretty much what you would do here is some of the code that you already saw me run. And I'm going to put all this code up in GitHub probably tomorrow in the airport. I'll tweet it and I'll blog about it so you can get to the code. If you want to know how to deploy a CS package file, I'll have all the code. I've got the code right here, but I just don't think we have time to run through it. And I've got some other demos that I'd rather show you. So I do want to point out that you can publish up the XML configuration and a CS package file using the same methodology that you just saw. It's actually the same client. It's the same compute client that does all the past stuff and the VM stuff. I'm going to skip that demo for now. We'll come back to it if we have time. And this is a big question. This is the question that Magnus was always asking me. He was like, I not only want to unit test stuff, I want to unit test the Azure SDK. I can't really unit test stuff. And my thing the whole time has been, if we have all these great automation tools, and we have this great way that we can fire up stuff in the cloud whenever we want to willy-nilly, why would I want to have a dedicated testing machine just sitting around using electricity and making me pay for, you know, real estate? I would rather have that testing environment get spun up than run my tests and then, guess what, delete that entire environment so that that environment is only alive for the amount of time that it takes my integration test to run to make sure that everything is cool, right? Sound impossible, right? Well, I've got a demo of that for you next. This is one of my favorites. So I'm going to show you integration testing using the management libraries. Now, I've got ReSharper installed right here so I can run some XUnit tests. But what I want to do is I want to walk through kind of what we're going to do in this XUnit test. I've got a setup file right here that's my website test base. And you'll see that I've got a sample website right here. What I also have in here is a storage helper. And that's a guy that's going to be shared between these sets of code. This storage helper is really nothing more than a way for me to save one record into an Azure table. And all I'm going to do is I'm going to save one little object that's got a welcome message and a description. Why would I want to do that? Because I want to integrate, I want to integration test my website to make sure that I've configured not only my storage account and my website, but that I've glued them together properly so that whenever I run my test, that website displays the message that I expected to see on the screen. Then, as long as it says what I expected to see, I'm going to destroy that website and I'm going to destroy that storage account at the same time. So the environment's only there for a little while. If I go into here to my controller, you'll see that this guy right here is going to take a look at an app setting, which is my storage account connection string. Then I'm going to initiate an instance of that storage helper, reach out to my storage account, and pull some data out of that storage account. Get configuration is just getting the stuff that I want to display to the user on the MVC page. So I'm really just trying to read data from that storage account. And I'm doing so by looking at the storage account connection string guy, which should be right here. And you'll see that it's empty. The reason it's empty is I don't know what the storage account connection string is going to be because I'm going to create it on the fly. Once I create it, I'm actually going to get its connection string or build its connection string by asking it what its keys are. And then I'm going to set the app setting using the website's API. I'm actually going to go out and I'm going to say, give me all your settings. I want to put a setting into your settings and then I want to publish it back out. Then I'm going to run the site. So I'll walk through that code real quick. Again, I'm going to dial in using AAD here. And you'll see this time I'm going to be publishing everything up into North Central. Just up north in Chicago. I'm going to create an instance of my website management client. And what you'll see is that we have a lot of little convenient features right here. So we've got cloud context. That's part of the common. And I'll say clients. Then I can say create management client, create website client, subscription client, whatever I want to do. So we give you all this pretty easily discoverable client-side API that you can work with so that if you're brand new to MAML, you can kind of get started easy by just looking at the IntelliSense. We also take a look at the MSDN documentation that's out there about the Azure APIs, and we put that documentation into our IntelliSense for this client. So as you're typing, you'll actually see, I can do that right here. I'll just say website management client, site management client, and I'll say, I'll say dot. You'll see that I have a couple of different operation sets on this guy, websites, web spaces, server farms I can play with. If I were to go to websites right here, you'll see that I have create, delete, and I have all other kinds of stuff. I can generate a password for my publishing user if I want to, and I can get the configuration, and then obviously I can update the configuration. That's what we're going to do in a minute. I'm going to create a random site name. Then I'm going to grab the web spaces, and that's basically just regions that support websites. So I'm going to take a look at that, and I want to find the one that's going to be North Central. Then I'm going to create a new website, and what I'm passing it right here is going to be the name of the web space. And then for all these REST calls, we have a parameter object for each individual call that we send up, and we have a response object for every single thing that we get down, proper client design. I'm going to send it a series of host names. I could actually omit that because it's going to be able to figure it out dynamically. And then I'm going to actually go out and I'm going to get the publish profile result. If you've ever right-click published a website inside of Visual Studio, this is the exact same API call that Visual Studio makes. It goes out to the API and it says, hey, I want you to generate a publish settings profile and give it to me so that Studio knows how to publish. I'm going to do all that at runtime. I'm going to go out and say, give me back your published profiles. Then I'm going to find the one that's specific to MS Deploy. There's going to be a second one there that's going to be FTP. Then I'm going to turn around and I'm going to use MS Deploy from within native code to publish my site. This is doing exactly the same thing that Visual Studio is doing, but I'm going to be doing it in a unit test. I'm going to be automating the entire thing. After I do that, and this is the part that will probably take just a second to run, I'm going to instantiate an instance of the storage management client because, again, I want to create a storage account right here, and I'm just going to pass it a random name. And then I'm going to actually interrogate the API one more time, and this time what I'm doing is I'm saying, hey, I want you to give me the keys, the primary and secondary key for this storage account, because I'm going to use the name of that storage account and the key that I get back from the API to dynamically build a storage account connection string right here. Once I've got that connection string, my code is going to go out and save data into an Azure table in that storage account. So I create a storage account, and then I save data to that storage account using my little code. Then I call the website's API one more time, and I tell you I need you to give me your configuration because I'm going to add an app setting to your configuration. You also have control in here over creating DNS entries as well, over connection strings, over everything else. So all I'm going to do here is I'm going to take that storage account connection string that I just used to save data up to the storage account, and I'm going to jam it into my web config, basically. I'm going to jam it into the runtime. And then that connection string will be there once I call this update configuration. And then in my dispose, I'm going to do it in reverse. In dispose, I'm going to delete my storage account. Then I'm going to delete my website so that it's like it was never there. As long as my test runs, I know everything is going to be okay. So I'm going to close down that base. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to run this test real quick. Run the unit test. And you can see that it did work in the demo room. And I'm going to open up this website deploy test. And you'll see right here, our VM has already been created, which is good. Right here is when I set the fixture. And then this is actually the unit test that runs. This is the unit test that will just do a screen scraping for all intents and purposes. I was doing this using Fluent Automation, but for whatever reason, the Selenium WebDriver kept blowing up on me. So I'm just going with raw screen scraping. All I'm doing here is I'm going out and I'm saying, I expect to see a couple of strings on this web page. As long as I see the strings that I expect to see, I'm happy. Everything seems to have worked. I've successfully run an integration test where I create all the assets, glue them together, configure everything, and I'm good. All right, so I'm going to flip back over to this demo that looks like it is finished. So it says that I've created a VM. That was from demo one just a moment ago. If I go out here, if I refresh this guy, we should see a couple of randomly named things. And I'm leaving that test running right now in the background. I don't think we're going to jump into it because of the fact that I've just ran it. But you see, we've already run that. We've already created a website, created a storage account, saved data, configured the site, browsed the site, made sure the content was right, deleted the storage account, deleted the website. Would you rather do that? Or would you rather have a room full of VMs sitting there waiting for you to do your QA? This one? My ego would love it if you would put your hands up. So what I'm going to do here, so I'm going to go into my VM. It says I'm going to download an RDP file. Yeah, I'm cool. Use another account. What was it? Some user. Please work. So that's going to go ahead and authenticate me right up to my VM that I just finished creating while I was doing the other demo. So you can see here that we've just automated the creation and deletion of five things simultaneously. Okay, my computer actually didn't crash. pretty good stuff, right? Would you, at the same time, these APIs have always been there. You could have written lower-level JSON.NET XML parsing HTTP code and just gone crazy if you wanted to. There are some community members who have. There was a gentleman over in London that I know who actually wrote a thing called Fluent Automation, or Fluent Azure is what it was called. And I remember loving Fluent Azure. He had this awesome Fluent signature that could just chain everything together. And I remember emailing him and saying, hey, I've got something coming out that I'd really like you to take a look at. And when we released Mammal, he hit me up on Twitter and he says, good job. And I was so happy because I was worried we were going to kind of rub him the wrong way there. Because we are open source. There's no reason why we couldn't have taken this stuff and built on top of it, with one exception. And that exception is all those other languages that we need to support, like Java, Node, Python. Okay? So while I'm connecting to this VM, I'm going to go ahead and get out of the portal here, flip back over to my deck, and we're going to move right along. If you were running a SaaS provider, would you want to manually create each instance? So you get an email from your website that says, Steve has told me that he wants me to create a new website for him. So I'm going to go out to my DNS provider and create steve.sitemonitor.net. Then I'm going to go out and I'm going to create his website for him. Then I'm going to... Does that sound like fun? Would you like to do that? You think you'd scale well? Or you think you'd scale if you could automate it? This is a great story for Mammal. SaaS providers love this because they can basically have a website that just churns out other websites. Now, I do want to set up this demo real quickly and give you kind of a little caveat. For whatever reason, I've never seen this happen before. And by the way, this is the VM that we just created. Okay, so this is the VM that I just created up there. And you can see that I've got VS installed. How many of you have to manage developers and hire developers and onboard developers? Wouldn't it be great if you could just run a script, give them their machine, give them access to it, and now they can party for free? Or not for free, but you know. The nice thing about this is, one of the things Guthrie likes to point out, I saw him give a talk one time, and he says, how many of you have MSDN subscriptions? 500 hands go up. He goes, keep them up if you're using your MSDN subscription for your Azure benefits. All but three of the hands go back down again. And he goes, do you know with the $200 of Azure benefits you get every month, or 150, whatever it is, through MSDN, you could run your entire dev test environment in Azure for free. I just showed you that. I just showed you how you can do that. You don't have to have test machines sitting around anymore. You can spin them up when you need them and kill them when you don't. Depends on how big your wallet is. I mean, you mean on your free stuff? I'd have to calc it. It would take me a little while. But we do it by compute. If you're not using the machine, if you stop your machine, we're not charging you for it. But we charge you by compute hour and by size. So if you're using an A9, it's going to be... I could go out to the pricing calculator and show you, but we charge you by compute. So if you're using a small instance, it's going to cost you less each month. If you're using an A9 or an A10, it's going to be a lot more expensive. But I'll pull up the pricing calculator and show you that so you can kind of do an estimate of it. All right, so what I've got out here, got this VM running. What demo was it I was going to show you next? Oh, the SaaS demo. One thing I do want to point out here, is that it? Yeah. Is that I have experienced this extremely strange DNS problem. And I've only experienced it in this hotel's network and across the street, the TechEd network. When I run this particular demo, it's going to create a website. As soon as I create that website and I try to browse to it, the DNS is going to say it doesn't know anything about it. If we were to take that domain name, which is like a blah.azurewebsites.net, and dig on it, it's going to find it. Which you can't find it right here. Something cool with this city is going on, all right? Some weird DNS thing. I was on link with some of the guys on the websites team the other day. I was creating these sites, and they were seeing them come in. They were like, I see it. I can browse it. I can't browse it. I can see it. I can see the files in it, but I can't browse it. It's kind of weird. It's kind of annoying. Good thing is, we've got a VM that we can browse from. So once I create this site, we'll just browse it from the VM. I know it's kind of lame, but you just got to trust me. Now, in this case, I've got a pretty simple web page, and what I've got inside of the app data folder for this website is I've got a PFX file. Idea behind this is I'm going to publish this up to Azure, and I want to be able to authenticate using a management certificate. Why would I not want to authenticate using AAD? Because it's going to ask you to log into AAD every time you want to do this. Your users might not have an AAD account. If Steve wants to create a website using my SaaS app, he doesn't already have an account in my AD. directory. So I'm going to authenticate using a PFX file instead. Need to be careful with that. If somebody gets your PFX file, they have control over your Azure account. So you just want to make sure you follow all the right precautions to make sure that PFX file is not obtainable. Okay, I just want to stress that one thing. Why do I want to stress that? Because the guys on the Antares team told me I had to. Okay. All right. Antares' website, sorry. That's what we call them. All right, so in this guy, now this is kind of cool because I've talked about all this CRUD logic that we have, creating, deleting, and blah, 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 blah. But we have other pieces of functionality too. If the Azure API can do it, and that partner has set up a meeting with us, and we've worked with them, that's pretty much everybody, except for the guys that are still coming out, they're going to have everything they want in their API is going to be exposed in their client layer. So we're even going to have convenience methods out there like, is hostname available? So in this case, I'm going to type some data into a form field that's going to turn around and hit a web API on my local host server right here. That web API is going to hit the Azure API, say, hey, is this hostname available? If it is, turn it green. If it's not, turn it red. Okay, so I'm just going to show you how that's going to work, and I'll throw it one that I already know is there. And, anybody in my SignalR talk? I can show SignalR anywhere, even when I'm doing the management libraries. That little trace demo that I did, it builds on this. Okay, so what I've got is a trace listener, just like the one that I did the other day in the SignalR talk, and this trace listener is going to bubble all the trace messages that I'm writing up to a SignalR hub so that I can see something happening in the client. I gotta wow you somehow. SignalR is a good way to do it. Okay. Now the create site is another API method that I'm gonna call from the client using jQuery. And then you see I'm gonna kinda go through the same process. I'm gonna create a website, then I'm gonna get the publish profile for that website. If I were to look right here in my Windows Explorer, where is it? You'll see that I have a folder here called MiniBlog. If I go into that folder, you'll see that I have a MiniBlog site. This is the blogging tool that I use. This tool that I'm going to run here is called MiniBlogger. It spins up MiniBlogs. It's a MiniBlog SaaS app. Okay, so I'm going to go out and I'm going to get that web deploy profile, just like I did before, publish everything up to the site, and this time I'm going to set a couple of app settings. And after I do that, I'm going to update the configuration. I'm just going to tell you the site's ready. So I'm going to go ahead and run this guy. It's going to run in my web browser. Tiny little web app here. Okay, so that's going to pop up in Chrome. Now I'm going to go over here and make sure my VM is running. And I'm going to fire up IE. Maybe. Yep. I'm going to go out here. Just open that up because I'm going to have a DNS issue if I try this. Now, I've already got a website out there called Brady Gaster MiniBlog. So I'm going to go right here and just type Brady Gaster MiniBlog. Oh, can't use that one. I'm not going to let you use that one because I've already got it. Okay, so I don't think you'd want that anyway. So I was picking on Steve, so I'm going to call this one Presley Blog. There we go. Says it's going to be created that URL. I want to put it in East US because I know he lives in Virginia. Presley Blog. Welcome to the Saxman. Saxman. I can't spell today. Steve. I know that's not how you spell it. Okay, now I'm going to do a create site. That's going to go out and it's going to start hitting the API. As I'm tracing messages back down to the using the SignalR hub, they're just going to bubble up right here. And at the very end, it's not going to pop open a pop-up browser because then nothing would work. It's just going to pop up this thing and say, hey, your site's been created. I'm going to copy this URL real quick, copy link address. I'm going to go out here. Now I'm good. I'm going to paste this in here. Steve has a blog. Anybody out there a SaaS provider? Think this would make your life a little easier? Let me show you another one that might make your life even more easy. So I like to use DN Simple as my DNS provider. Okay? And one of the things that I want to do in my SaaS application, let me actually flip back to my PowerPoint so I got to set it up for you. I shouldn't have done that. setting up the next demo. So here's my DNS registrar, and you see that I don't have anything set up. But what I do have is this guy over here, this site monitor, and the only reason it's that one is because I have this demo app that I always work on, and I own that domain. I didn't want to buy another domain just for the demo. But if I end up doing this demo a lot more, I guess I'll have to. So I've got that guy selected right here, and I want to do manage domains. Oh, wrong one. My bad. Manage domains. So see that I don't have any domains. I've just got my one, azurewebsites.net. I do want to stress one thing here. You can set up a wildcard record now. That's one of the most requested features. So I could go out here and I could type star.sitemonitor.net, and then I could go over to DN Simple and I could do the mapping, and now I've got a wildcard domain set up. I made this particular demo before I had that. Okay, so before you had to actually create a CNAME in your DNS registrar and then create that mapping inside of Azure Websites and they would glue together. So just assume this is in the past, okay? Because you've got wildcarding now and you can party like crazy. But let's say I don't want to give you the ability to go to, you know, foo.sitemonitor.net knowing that foo isn't there. And I want to ask you for some cooperation on this one. For the jokers in the audience, please don't go to the website that I create before I go to it on stage because you will break my demo. Thank you, DNS. Okay, so I just want to point that out. Please just be nice to me today so I don't have to do it again and, you know, whatever else. All right, so what I'm going to do now is I've got this little app right here. That's the other one. I can close that one down now. Did I open it up yet? No. Sorry, I've got too many things open now. I've got SaaS with subdomains. And what I've got is a tiny little app, just a console exe. And what I'm going to do in this console exe, it's pretty much the same thing you've seen me do two other times already. I'm going to create a site. Actually, I've already created that site. I've already created the site and pushed it out there. So I've already got sitemonitor.azurewebsites.net out there. So I'm going to go out here and go to sitemonitor.azurewebsites.net, and you'll see, boom, there's our domain. I don't have any other domains set up on this yet. You already saw that. I also don't have any in my DN Simple guy. I've been wondering and wondering and wondering for the longest time, like, how do you call the DN Simple API? I read their documentation. I was like, whatever. Last night, I'm like, you know, having a beer with Mads, and I just pull up my phone, and I say, Cortana, I want you to tell me if there's a NuGet package for DN Simple. And she went right to it on NuGet. There is a NuGet package if you're partying on top of DN Simple. So client API wrapper. You can imagine how excited I was considering that what I'm showing you here is my product, which is a series of REST wrappers. So when I found out that DN Simple have one, great. So I'm going to go back over to this app real quick. And you'll see here that this is the site that I've already published out. And I'll open up this program. And I've got a lot of config stuff in here. It's because they're usernames and passwords. And I really don't want you to hijack my domain. So I'm not going to pull up that app config right now. No offense. We're also recording this. So you can imagine I wouldn't want that stuff to be recorded. You do a screenshot, I'm done. Okay. So I'm going to read in some config data. Then I'm actually going to ask you for what domain you want me to get. Then I'm going to call the DN Simple client. And I'm going to add a CNAME, almost an A record. I'm going to add a CNAME for whatever I just typed into that guy. Then I'm going to turn around and I'm going to log in to, I'm going to authenticate against the Azure API. I'm going to get the website that I've got in my app config here. And I'm going to add a host name to it. What I'm going to add to it is going to be the subdomain .sitemonitor.net that you just typed into that console app. So I'm going to do all that stuff directly as soon as you type in the information. And then again, I'm going to call the update method. And I'm going to pass it the list of host names that I just, appended, basically. So I'm going to go ahead and run this guy real quick. Remember, please be nice to the presenter. So I'm going to go ahead and type Gabe, my son's name. You can log me in. There. Now if I go out here, I do Gabe. Sitemonitor.net. There. It's already there. If I go out to DN Simple, I do a refresh here. There's Gabe.sitemonitor.net. And if I go into the portal and I select, I got to refresh because it's a JavaScript love. While it's refreshing, I want to save myself some money. So that should have been refreshed by now. Where did it go? Select this guy, click manage domains, and there's gabe.siteminder.net. So I've created a subdomain that now, like if I have code in my application, you probably did this in old school ASP. I remember we talked about this at lunch years back. You interrogate, was it request? I forgot this earlier and had to ask Kate. Request.server variables, server name? Is it server name? And you basically look at the first segment, and then you show this is Brady's blog or this is Steve's blog. You can imagine the next time you see this demo, which will probably be in Philadelphia, I'll probably do something like that. So we customize each site depending on which user's site we're actually going to. So you guys like that? You think that's kind of a cool feature? Cool. I think my favorite thing about that demo, quite frankly, is knowing that the Ansible has a client. I just think that is hot. I love that. All right. Any SQL guys in the room? I only saw about 4 or 5 hands go up earlier. Okay. I have some SQL databases in Azure that I need to manage and back up. You could automate this using some of the SQL tools if you wanted to, but let's say you have the need to have greater control over what's going to happen. You or you're like me and you're kind of obsessive and you want everything to work the way you want it to work. Maybe what you want to do is you want to back up your database to a blob and then download that blob so that you have it on your local your local network so that it's super, super safe. And let's say you want to run this process on a schedule. The nice thing about that is you could actually do this as a scheduled job in Azure too if you wanted to. And now that we have the SMB heads on top of storage, you could just set up a file share and just watch the file share on the storage account whenever you see a new, you can put a file system watcher on it. Whenever you see a new file pop in, you can just grab it and pull it over. I think that's a really awesome feature. I've had a couple of community members asking for it for a long, long time. But what we're going to do in this guy, since they've GA'd and given me permission to show this, is I'm going to show you how to create and manage SQL servers, firewall rules, databases, and backups for Microsoft Azure SQL. We're going to do all this in one shot, just like everything else that we've done. Now, the reason that I'm doing all these in big one-shot deals is because I figure, if I cover a great amount of material for you in my code, you can just take all the pieces that you need and use them however you want to. So you can just go crazy with this all you want to. Another one that I've done, I don't have the code right here on my computer today, but I'm a really big web jobs freak. I love the new websites web job stuff, and one of the things that I'm working on in the other side of the hall is actually some new web jobs tooling that we're going to have in Visual Studio later this year. So I love playing with this stuff. So I was thinking, self. I know that the web job scheduler functionality is not built into web jobs itself. If you ever look through .NET using Reflector, we used to have this fun game we would play. Figure out what order these 9 classes were built in using Reflector. So we would just go through Reflector and find a dependency from this class to this class. Oh, those two came in that order, and you kind of go down the chain. You can do the same thing in Azure. So we have web jobs. Web jobs doesn't have a scheduling piece built into it. But you know what else we have in Azure? A scheduler service. The scheduler service basically wakes up, and whenever it wakes up, it calls an API, and when the API gets called, the web job runs. So in that particular demo, I use 4 clients. I create a website, then I use the Kudu client to actually upload an exe to a web job, then I create a scheduler job collection, then I create a scheduler job, and I tell that scheduler job, you are an HTTPS job, and whenever you run, you're going to call this URL. And whenever he wakes up and runs, he calls the web job, and the web job exe runs on the server side. So I did that whole thing using MAML in 60 lines of code. So that was pretty fun. The nice thing about that was when I showed it to Dave Ebo, the guy that was serving the web jobs team, he was like, oh, that's very novel. I mean, he's really smart, so I'm not. So it was really nice to hear him say that. I want to point out that we do have all this capability inside of these different clients, and you can compose it together however you want. And we have all other kinds of composition features coming on later this year through the APIs too. I'll just remove some namespaces, again, the obsessive stuff. I'm going to hide this code here because I've got my subscriptions in there and this is being recorded, so I don't want to show all that, but you've already seen me authenticate to AD a couple of different times. Pardon me. Now in this guy, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create an instance of the SQL management client. Then I'm going to list my servers. I probably don't have any. I might have added one in the last couple of hours by accident, you running this code. I'm going to get a list of those servers, and then I'm going to iterate over that list of servers. And as I do, I'm going to call back out, and I'm going to say, I want you to give me all the databases for each one of those servers. This is a good opportunity for me to show you that object model one more time and some of the IntelliSense stuff. I'll just paste this in. And I'll go right here and I'll click servers. I'll do create. And you see this awesome documentation that's going to pop up that's a little transparent, forgive me. Create. So I've got create, change admin password, et cetera, et cetera. If I were to back up here and look at firewall rules, you'll see that I've got create, got delete, and of course I've got get. Speaking of firewall rules, there's one thing I do want to highlight in here. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to basically look at my database server, and I'm going to iterate over my databases. Once I create my, that's my server. So I create my server here. I get the server name. Then I'm going to create a database. And I'm just going to create a web edition database, pretty small, just 1 gigabyte database, randomly named. I'm going to let you know that I've created the database. Then I'm going to set the firewall rule. Now, this might look a little bit squirrely, but I do want to point this code out because it's extremely important if you want to automate the creation of databases in Azure that you're going to want to use by applications in Azure. You know how when you create a database in Azure, there's a little checkbox that says, allow Azure access to my database? Whenever you check that box, this is the API call that they're going to make. The name doesn't matter. But what we do is we have start and end of 0.0.0.0. That's how we flag that we're going to allow the Azure Pass and VMs to access that database. Now, if you're creating your own VM and then you're installing SQL Server on it explicitly, you know, you obviously don't have to use this guy. You can just, you know, party on it. Or you could use the compute demo that I showed you earlier and just create a new SQL database server and now you're off and running again. So I just want to point out that is the one caveat. If you're going to be doing like a website to a database or a cloud service to a database, worker role, et cetera, this is one requirement that you have to do. Nice thing about this is if you forget to do this step, you can just go to the portal and check that box yourself. So I just want to point out that you do have that capability. If you're doing this through the SDK, this is the way that you do it. Once I do that, I'm actually going to go ahead and create a storage account. That'll take about 2 minutes, so I'll take questions during that time. I'll put a breakpoint right here. Create the storage account so we know when that runs. I'll go ahead and put one right there as well. Now, this is the same kind of deal as before. I'm going to create that storage account. I'm going to get its keys. I'm going to build its connection string. And then this is when it gets interesting. I am going to call the DAC operations export. You can imagine it has another one too, import. So you can export and import different databases into and out of blobs, just like you can in the portal, just like you can through the SQL tools. You can do all this in code whenever you want to. So I'm just going to take that database, export it to that blob, and then if I wanted to, I could go out to the portal, click on that guy, download it, and open it up in SQL Server Management Studio and create new database locally. Database isn't going to have any data in it because I just created it and then backed it up. Kind of lame, but you get the idea. I'm going to put a breakpoint right there too. I'm going to go ahead and run this guy. And before I do, I'm going to flip out here. You can see, do I have any SQL databases? I have no SQL databases in my account. I'll run this guy. And in this demo, I'm not only using the MAML NUGETs, I'm also using the storage SDK. I'm using the storage SDK so that I can go out to that storage account after I create it and create a container into which I'm going to jam all the SQL backups that I do. So you can see here, it's going to create the database. There you go, creating the storage account. And this will kind of show you that that one step does take about 2-3 minutes. While we're waiting for that to run, anybody got a short question?
What's the API look like for just running this against your own 12 servers, R2, and your own data center?
There is near parity in those APIs, and my partner Guang, who PMs the PowerShell and the Xbox CLI tools, he recently did a matrix. I'd love to share it with you, but I don't know if I can because it's got a couple of other areas in it, like China and some other stuff. Where we show all the different APIs that we support in the SDK and what we don't support. I can't tell you that we have 100% parity across the on-prem stuff, but one of the reasons for that is that the API isn't 100% parity. So what we have to do is we have to lock to a version in that guy and probably just freeze the code and say, this is the branch that we use for the on-prem stuff. We just haven't gotten there yet. So, but we are definitely going there. Some of the APIs that you're seeing me call here, you could call directly against your on-prem instance if you wanted to, but not all of them. I apologize. But we are doing the best we can to get there. All right. Exporting the database. How do you like the on-prem? Have you enjoyed it? Has it been helpful?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I'd rather do this.
Yeah. So export the database. That may take a second or two. What I'm going to do real quick is I'm going to go out here to the portal and do a refresh here. Do I have any other console write lines? Yeah, I do. I've got finished. Did it finish? Oh, it finished. I'm going to go out here, and you'll see that I have a couple of randomly named storage accounts. Wonder which one it is. What do we think here? Let's try that one. We'll go to containers. DHTs. That's not it. We'll go to this one. Containers. DB backups. There's my backup. We'll download that. It's right there. You know what? I don't even need to do that. I love this feature. I got to show off this feature. So what I'm going to do in the portal right now is I'm going to back up just a little bit into my storage account. I'm going to do manage access keys. I'm going to leave that window open right here real quick. I'm going to do connect. I love this feature. This is cool too. It's my favorite feature of the new SQL tools. So I'm going to go right here. I'm going to say import data to your application. Next, import from Windows Azure. I'm going to do connect. It's asking for my key. Oh, is that the right one? Copy this guy. Oh, that's not it. Sorry. Which one was it? Okay. Manage access keys. Copy this one. Apologies, guys. Copy this one. There we go. Now I'm going to click next. I'm going to do that. Look at there. It found that guy, and it found that backpack that I just dropped out there using the SDK. I'm going to do next, finish. Now I'm not downloading the database. I'm downloading that backpack file that I just exported using the SDK. That was successful. Let me go over here. There's my database. You can see that it has nothing in it, which should be expected because we just created it and then backed it up. Silliness. Okay. Do I have time? Yeah, I guess I have time. Let me show you this one more. For those guys in the room that are worker role nuts, I want to go ahead and open this thing up real quick. Server. Yeah. All right, so in this project, I have a cloud service project, I have a worker role project, and I have a console exe. Just want to show you this code. I'm not going to run it. It would take too long to deploy. Oh, that's another thing. We can make the period of time between you starting development and you having a working app shorter. We cannot shorten the amount of time it takes for you to deploy something to Windows Azure. We can't bend space time. Okay, so the SDK is just going to get the workflow a little bit easier for you. But, you know, if you have to wait 10 minutes to do a cloud service deployment when you do it from Studio, you're going to have to wait 10 minutes to do a cloud service deployment when you do it from Mammal as well. I just want to stress that. So in this code, what I do, just like before, I'm going to new up an instance of the compute management client, and then I'm going to create a cloud service, and then I'm going to actually create a deployment as well. And the XML that I'm going to grab is going to be the XML of my config file that I have right here, CSCFG, this guy. I'm actually going to use the cloud one. And the output of this guy, you can see here that I've got this deployment package, and I've got the CSCFG, and I've got the CS package file. What I'm going to do then is I'm going to create a storage account, or if it doesn't already exist, and I'm going to grab that CSPKG file, and I'm going to put that CSPKG file up into my storage account. Why would I do that? Because that's where Azure is going to pull that package file from to do the deployment. So that long process that you have to wait for sometimes, let me trust you, do this over the hotel network, you'll gouge your eyes out with a spoon. It's really, really painful. Because that file is about 6-7 megabytes, and this network is not that fast. So whenever I do this, what's going to happen is that CS package file is going to get dropped into the storage account, which is in the same subscription as the cloud service that I'm going to be deploying to. Okay, that's a rule. You got to do it that way. Once that cloud service gets deployed, it's going to pull that CS package file over, expand it, and then my cloud service is going to be running. I just want to point out, I don't have time to run this one, I apologize, but I do want to point out that you could use Mammal to deploy your CS package files as well. The one thing that's a little bit squirrely about it is one of the parameters in the deploy command is a string, and the string is the XML from that CSCFG file. You can see that right here. So this is actually the XML from the CSCFG file. So that's kind of the only thing that's a little weird is we have to take that XML and just send it up to the API as a string so they know how to configure the cloud service and fire it all up. Okay? So that's the deal with that. I just wanted to show you that demo, but if I run it, it won't get deployed before we have to end, which is now. I really appreciate your time today. I hope that you've enjoyed it. I don't have any resources on here. I apologize. I do want to ask you to please evaluate this. Let me know what you think. I plan on doing more of these demos in the future. It's a brand new product, so we haven't done quite a few demos on it. I did a demo at Build that was about a half hour, and then this one, which is the one I really wanted to do at Build. So I want to thank you for coming out. Next time I hope to have a full room. That'd be a lot more fun. So thanks a lot. I'll be around for questions.